Okay, so just real quick, if you are having trouble with logging in to the web portion to see the different slides that Jack and Blair are going to go through, go to readytalk.com, and there should be a section there that says join a meeting, and below it it'll say chairperson login. So you should just go to the one that has the place for the access code, and if you look at the little chat box, the access code is in there, 719-8355. If you enter that in, of course, you'll have to fill it out, the little registration details still, but then you should be able to see what the presentation is going through. And then that hopefully will be good for you. And I will mute the lines for the call just so we don't have any random noises or anything, but I will open them up at the end. So if you have any questions during the call, just chat them to me, and I'll make sure that they get answered. And we'll just kind of go from there. So I'll mute the lines, and then, Jack, you can go ahead and take over when that's finished.
Okay. Hello, everyone. Thank you. I think what Megan was looking for was for Blair and I to go back to see how do we coach a client through the process. What I went through with the three main points is how do you get to the client's pain, how do you windmill the information back with the pain, and also the other information you need to see, and then how do you use the Zohr in presentation, how do you use the hangers to tie it back into the presentation so you have everything going in one direction. So when I start out with pain, I'm looking with some very general questions. You know, why, tell me more. Is this a lot of Sandler? Do you have any specific examples, how long it's been going on? What's the real reason you're here? What's important to you? How does it make you feel? What's the impact? So you can take these kind of general questions and get the conversation started with almost anyone as you start the process here. Let me give you a couple examples. This person came in and said, I really hate my boss. He's a dictator. So generally you start with how long has he been your boss and how long is the problem going on? How does he compare to previous bosses? What if you get a bad boss again? You change your job, so it happens again. You know the company's not going to change your boss. What are you going to make happen? What are you going to do? How are you going to handle this? So you're trying to get them to feel the pain over again. You want them to visibly be taken back by this, the questions, and you're going to keep on getting into more and more detail. These are just the surface ones. And as you're responding to them each time, you got to get deeper and deeper until you really feel you got the real pain. You know, another example might be, I've lost my job. You know, what I say is, I'm sorry to hear that. What's happened? Did you see this coming? And generally, I ask how the interview's going. And that tells me, are they really serious about looking for a business, or the interviews are just slow? How much did you make? Are there many jobs at that level? This is for the higher-up people. If they're making $500,000, there's not that many jobs around at that level. You know, what happens if you go back and it happens again? And then I always try and bring the spouse in. What does your spouse think? What does your wife think about this? And that usually makes them even squirm a little bit more. You're trying to get them to feel the pain. So the more pain they feel, the more open they're going to be to listening to your suggestions. You're not selling. You're trying to discover why they're here. What's going on? What's the problem here? Another one is, hey, or is the CEO has no vision. The company is not doing well. I ask, is the company in trouble? And why is this important? Why do they need a vision? I ask about your future. Are you concerned about that? And then I always get them to accept it. Well, they're not going to change the CEO. You can go to another company and find the same things. What are your next steps? How are you going to take control? What's your vision? And so, again, you're driving down as much as you can to get into the pain. So what we do here is we role play, and we have about 10 to 12 different ones we go through. And these are just three or four we went through. But we go through a bunch of this and just try and role play it out. What were the questions? What were the answers? So you can be prepared to ask it. But I think a lot of the benefit of Sandler training is you help to surface the client's pain with the right questions. And you keep on asking that question over and over again. You keep driving down to get to that level. And then you start to gather the information for windmilling to get it back to the client. You can include the pain in the windmilling, but you got to get a lot of other stuff too. And windmilling is really done to make sure the client knows that you've heard him or her and understand their pain. The more information you get on that client, the better they're going to feel that you understand them. And, again, always include the pain points when you're windmilling as you go back through this. So a lot of you gathering is the basic stuff that we get all the time on the PFA, and you're going through that. We have a sheet. We fill out the sheet on each meeting before they come in. You know, what's their money? What's their net worth? Their age? Their marital status? Do they want to work together? Does the spouse work? Do they have benefits? Have they ever owned a business before? Just a lot of detail we're gathering. So before they come in, we have a lot of this off the PFA. You know, I want to know what their income is. What do they need? What's their break even? What's their cash flow? And how long they can go without taking money out of the business? And what do they see themselves doing? Is a full-time owner-operator or is semi-absentee? What's the environment they want to be in? More professional, or are they willing to go with some blue-collar workers? A lot of difference between Focal Point and Dryer Vent Wizard. You know, how do they see themselves? What's the image? We're pressed pretty hard on the image question, what they see themselves doing in the future. What's their sales ability? Have they ever been involved in sales? You know, sales, I tell people, is not a PowerPoint. It's getting out and knocking on doors, networking at Chamber of Commerce, networking quite a bit. Are you comfortable with this? So you're drilling down to get a lot of information. And the whole focus of this is to make sure the client feels you're on their side. You're trying to help them. You're trying to really understand what the pain is, what kind of talent, what are you bringing to the table, what your needs are before we start driving forward with any kind of suggestions. I talked about the type of customer. Do they want to work with business owners or the general public? Old people, young people, kids? Have they had any kind of management? What kind of employees do they want? How big? You know, senior care, you get up to $2 million, you're going to have 50, 60 employees. Temporary help, you could be placing a lot of people out there. The environment, home-based office. We have an office condominium here up in where we have our offices, and they can see it. This is an office environment. We talk to them. Can you see yourself coming here on a daily basis, or are you more inclined to go home or retail? You want a service? Are you comfortable with the product? What do you want? And then where they live. In New Jersey, we're the most densely packed state. New York City is even worse. And how far are they willing to commute? You know, what territory is available? They say a half hour, 20 minutes, 45 minutes. You know, what territory is available there? My son and Boynton do, they do a lot of this on the phone. They call it a pre-call before they get into it. I do not do that. I do this off the PFA when they come in. I write down all the top values off the PFA. I review the needs and wants. I put the important points, I think, down here so I can include them in the windmill as well. I go through the buyer types, the communication styles. You know, the belonger, the emulator, the achiever, each of these are different in how you're going to speak to them. You know, the belonger, it's all about safety, security, family, and each of them has their own key points, and you want to try and bring this back. Above the recommendations I've written down, I put belonger, visual, the key points, so I can remember how I want to present those franchisors. Are we talking of a visual? We're going to frame the picture. We're going to see how it looks. You know, a lot of visual comments when I'm presenting that the franchise company to them. And again, going back to the buyer type. You know, I focus on the visual and the auditory and the kinesthetic. I don't really see the digital hardly ever. I don't think many people do. But the first three I focus on. Now, you generally find just write down on the side four or five keywords that I can include when I'm presenting back to them so I don't forget. And I write it above the recommendations before I start to get into it. So I make sure I'm using those keywords. And you also have to know yourself. You know, I'm an auditory. So I don't worry about what to say to an auditory, but I deal with a visual that I got to keep framing the picture, talking about the vision of it, and you got to keep using those words as you're going through the process here. I always go through. We have all the 2-minute drills and 3-ring binders. We go through them before they come in. We review what franchises. We check on territory. We generally know, but sometimes we have to check on territory. We're picking the best four with a couple others in backup if they don't work. We might have 6 or 7 written down on the list. And again, the more information you have with the client, the better. You know, if there's any questions on the PFA about money, net worth, liquidity, we will make that phone call before they come in, before they meet with us. I always ask the client many times throughout the meeting, what questions do you have? If the client has questions and they're waiting for you to finish, they're not hearing what you're saying. The client has to have an empty mind. You got to keep asking the client, what's going on? What are you thinking? Any questions? Anything I can help you with? So before I windmill it back again, I want to make sure I've emptied their mind of questions. And then I start asking the question after I've windmilled. I think you have you keep asking the question, is there anything I am missing? So you want them to say to you, I think you have everything. Is there anything that matches my profile? It means to me they're now open to hear what I have to say. If I get to presentation too quickly, before they're ready for it, it's going to fall on deaf ears. So you have to first get the pain, understand the client, get the windmilling back to them before you present. So that's the basics I do with, so that I now have a line with them. In the initial part of the meeting, you're doing the basic Sandler bond and rapport, and that's great, but you're not going to get anywhere with that. That's only a starter. You got to get to the pain, understand the client, windmill it back. Then we use the hangers for the stories. They're not going to remember any facts. They remember the stories. And we do this in the seminars. We're setting up the same stories. We're tying it in. We do our training here. We start with the seminars and what the hangers are and what companies you want to show, what's our inventory, what are our horses. You have to set that up in the seminar or the workshop. They will remember the story. And once they remember the story, the facts keep coming back to them. But first, make sure you have some good stories. If you don't have stories, steal them from someone else. And I tell the people in our office, use my stories anytime you want. Just get it out there. Every franchise has to have a hanger. If you can't figure it out, what that is, why it's unique, why it's different, why are you showing it, the prospect never will. You have to get that across. And as you're doing the hanger, you're then going back to the assessment. You're going back to the windmill. Here's why I'm showing this to you. And you're going to have about 8 or 9 reasons for it. And then you go and talk about the franchisor. But first let them know, here's why I think this is a fit. Based on our conversation, based on your assessment, based on what we're hearing right now, here's what I think is going here. And then I start to present it, trying again to tie it back into what they want to do. You have to figure out which hanger goes to every prospect. What's their, as you're going through and you're listening, what's going to make it from what you've heard, their pain from their, from the windmilling, what's the best way that you can tie in and really latch into what this person is saying? Then you layer on as much as you can about that hanger. So once you've established that fact, you're now giving them more of the information dump, but they got to be ready to hear what you're saying. If you're not, then you haven't done your job. You screwed up somewhere along the line. Go back and dig deeper before you present the next one. Something's missing. You know, I think if you don't know the deal, you have to live with it, and you got to really fix it. You got to spend some time understanding the inventory better. You only need, you know, maybe 10 to 12 horses. You just got to know how to present them to all different types of buyers. You know, I can present senior helpers or any of the senior franchises we have to almost anyone. I can do that with temporary help. I can do it with Club Pilates. You got to understand how to present it to so many different types of buyers and present it in that way. And, Megan, I think that's it. I'm going to turn it over to Blair, unless you want to do questions here or do questions at the end. I'll turn it back to you, Megan.
Yeah, there's a few things that I would add to that, Jack. So there's a few things that my group does that we've trained on. So my group also uses what the template, the critical questions, that goes out to the client at the time that we schedule the meeting. So that's the meeting agenda email that probably all of you use. We attach the critical questions, which also tells us quite a bit about the client. What I've also noticed is that the clients that buy tend to get that critical questions to us, you know, a day or two before the meeting. So that'll help us prepare for the meeting as well. My group, for the most part, also does what John Armstrong does, which is what I call the pre-qualification or the coffee meeting, which isn't quite the main meeting. Just, hey, we've received the PFA. We're trying to see, is this person really qualified? We might ask them, you know, a handful of questions to get to know the person a little bit better. And then if all is good, schedule the meeting. There's a few other questions that we tend to always ask during the meeting. One is, what are your must-haves that have, so what are your items that you have to have in the business? And if it's not in the business, it's off the list. Also, what are your like-to-haves? Okay, that, hey, if it, the business also had this in it, That would also be great. And also, what do you know you definitely don't want to have in the business? In other words, hey, if the business had this in it, it's off the list. So those are kind of three additional questions that we always ask every client. The other questions that we tend to drill down on is what I call shades of gray questions. So, for example, you know, you might see something in a PFA or QSR that'll say, you know, I want the business to be fun. Well, okay, I think I know what that is, but I'm going to drill down on it and ask the client, hey, well, what's fun to you? What would you really enjoy? Or somebody says, hey, I need time flexibility. Well, why do you need time flexibility? What type of time flexibility that do you need? So there's a lot of what I call shades of gray questions that are always asked during the meeting as well. I would say our typical client meeting lasts somewhere between an hour to an hour and a half. And generally a good rule of thumb is that you should probably be speaking 30% of the time and your client should be speaking 70% of the time. And if you find the ratios are switched, your meeting is way off, okay? Your client should be doing majority of the talking during the meeting. And like Jack said, we're taking copious notes along the way. We always windmill all the bullet points back to the client, like Jack said, to confirm that we heard everything correctly of the client. And we always have them confirm, hey, did we get this list correct? Because this is what I'm going to type up and put in your business model. So we want to confirm back that, yep, we heard everything correct. And at least we know at this point, quite often the business model will change, but we know at this point what it is that they're looking for. And then like Jack said, you know, we only show the deals, the franchises. So usually before the meeting, I might have a list of, I don't know, 4, 5 to 7 or 8 different companies that I think the client is going to be end up looking at. And I'm trying to narrow that list down to about 3, maybe 4 if it's an optional, and have them pick 3 of the 4. And then show the client the businesses as it matches their business model as well as their communication style, which is a lot to think about, but if you can, it's great. Now, there were a couple things that have happened recently, which, Megan, I think you wanted us to touch on, which was, hey, we heard some offices kind of handing out materials as they were showing deals, which was a pretty big concern to Jack, Jana, and I. We never hand out materials to our clients, ever. We don't give any pamphlets. We don't give any what I call infinity lists, which is backgrounds of franchisees, ever. That just opens you up to lawsuits. If you're using them as a crux on how to show a deal, there's an easy, like Jack said, you should know the inventory cold, or at least your horse is cold. But if for whatever reason you don't, there's an easy way to show a deal that usually a client will bite off on. And that's to claim total ignorance. So let me give you an example. I had a client here in Oregon a few months ago, and it was a belonger. He was pretty good at networking, wanted a hands-on style business, wanted something that was fairly home-based, very affordable, liked kind of fixing things like that. And so one of the companies that I thought he should look at, but I didn't know at all, was Dryer Vent Wizard. I didn't know the deal at all. And I'm like, God, you know, I think this is one that the client should look at. So what I do, which may help you out, and I learned this from Howie many, many, many years ago, which is to claim ignorance and just tell the client, say, hey, you know what? There's a new business in our inventory that I think you should take a look at. But in all honesty, client, I don't know much about it. But from what I see in our research, you match the style of person that has been looking at this business, but more importantly, been buying this business. And what I'd like to do, I just think we should take a look at it together and learn together on this business. But I think it's one that we should definitely take a look at. The name of the company is called Dryer Vent Wizard. I think it's going to match up with you based on what you're telling me, because I think it hits all these different points in your business model. But notice what's missing is the hanger, because I don't know the hanger yet. So just claim ignorance and show the business under an ignorant style, if you will. Those are the main things that I wanted to cover, Jack and Megan, but I just wanted to make sure that please, please, please do not hand out any materials to your clients or give earnings claims. What a lot of times what clients will do is they will start asking questions about the company that you showed them. If it's pretty basic questions, I will answer them. But for the most part, I will deflect it right back to them and say, hey, good question. Why do you ask? They'll give me a little bit more information. I say, hey, tell you what, why don't we just save that question and ask the franchisor? Because I want to make sure that you get good, accurate information. You know, I know a little bit about a lot of different companies, but I want to make sure you get good, accurate information because this is a big decision for you. So write down that question and let's go ask that franchisor on the first phone call that you have with them.
Yeah, two quick comments on Blair's. I don't get many people asking for materials, but if they do, how I handle it is, you know, many years ago when we got started, we used to hand out brochures and stuff like that, but it gets so out of date. Let me just have them email you. You got a half-hour drive. I'll email them now, and you're going to have it in your inbox by the time you get home, and it's going to be the most current stuff. We'll just get the most up-to-date information from the franchisor who's, you know, updating their stuff on a continual basis. That's the best way to handle this. I mean, I can't really give you anything. I don't have anything here. We don't do that anymore because it just gets so out of date so quickly. So I'll have them email you. Is that okay? And most of them say, great. And I just register them right away, get onto it, and make sure they have it. The other thing with Blair mentioned about optionals, I find that optionals will ask for a lot more suggestions. And I'm just saying you're going to be drinking water out of a fire hose. We have other suggestions. And as each week, as you drop one, we're going to add maybe one or two more. But let's just start to manage the flow of information. I know you want to see more, and we have more. But let's just take this one step at a time. It's a process. You want to make sure we keep getting fine-tuning. I want to know what you don't like and what you like so we can keep on targeting what you like and get closer to finding you the right one. Because if you don't handle the optional right, they're going to be all over the Internet. They want to know what else is out there. So by telling them they're going to get more, you're going to help them with the process, fine-tune it, it generally keeps them off the Internet for a bit. Those are my two comments on Blair. Thank you.
That's great. Is there anything else you guys want to say about the presentation that you went through or about handling comments like that before I open up the lines?
No, the only other thing I would add is so typically once a client leaves the office or, you know, Skype or FaceTime meeting, whatever the case may be, you know, we type up the business. I always tell the client, hey, we're going to type up your business model. I'm sorry, let me back up. We always tell the clients, hey, you're going to get a few emails from us. You're going to get one, a copy of your business model in a visual mind map format. I want you to review it when you get a chance. You're also going to get a sample list of questions to ask the franchisors on the first call so that you're totally prepared. And then we always schedule the follow-up meeting before the client leaves the office as well. So always, always, always schedule the follow-up meeting. Now, what does change depending on who the client is if it's an achiever, I will typically register the client with the franchisor pretty soon. In other words, that day, most likely, because achievers want their information quick. They want to start setting up phone calls, setting up meetings in pretty rapid fashion. I will usually wait at least 24 hours if it's a belonger. I have found that if I register my belongers pretty soon after the client meeting, they're getting overwhelmed and bombarded in the process of moving too quickly for them. So I like to give them kind of a day, maybe a day and a half, just kind of let things settle from the initial meeting, and then have the franchisors reach out to them. I've found that that's been helpful too.
Yeah, that's
couple
a great
comments. Yeah, after they leave our meeting, we do type up. What I tell them, not the model, I say, I'm going to summarize all my notes for you. I'm going to, we went over this in the seminar. I'm going to summarize my notes, customize it for you, and then I need your feedback on that's correct or not. So we do email them with the follow-up, you know, this in Frank Connect, the follow-up email. We do the model with that. And then we hand send them a thank you card, handwritten thank you card. We send them the franchising book and, the again, the four steps of research. We mail that to them. So they get two packages from us, a thank you card and then the book with the research. And that, most people aren't getting snail mail anymore. So that stands out to them. So generally they will call us back or email us saying, thanks a lot for the book. It's very helpful. I enjoyed the meeting too. When's our next call? and then I schedule at that point. I want to see them start to get a little active. If I don't hear from them within the first 5 or 6 days after they leave, I just call them and say, make sure that nothing fell through the cracks, through this, you know, the spam mail filters or the junk mail filters. I want to make sure that they're getting everything that we're sending them. And then after that, I try and schedule the phone calls.
So we pretty much do the same thing. We also send a handwritten thank you card to every client to say, hey, you know, it's a pleasure meeting you. I'm really looking forward to working with you. You know, my team and I will be working very hard in helping you find the right franchise match for you. P.S., I hope you enjoy the enclosed book. So we also priority mail a Street Smart franchising book. I make a little note in the book, put in my business card so they have kind of a book marker. So, and they always comment on that as well. Just, hey, thank you, great book, follow the process really well. So it's an extra little added touch.
Yep.
So we do the same thing.
Yep.
Perfect. All right, I'm going to go ahead and open the lines for everybody so we can ask questions if we have any.
Okay.
The conference has been unmuted.
All right, does anybody have any questions or comments or anything that they'd like to ask Jack or Blair while we have them here about this topic?
Hey, this is Steve. I'll just add something that I found helpful and maybe others will too. It's sort of a combination of what Blair and Jack do in getting ready for their meeting. So Jack will have a short list. Blair has a pre-meeting. But you're talking about, you know, the hangers and the short list of franchises that you're likely to show a client. So I do the same thing. I short list. So I might have, like, I'm looking at one in front of me. I do this for every single client, too. I've got 8 on my short list. And then what I do is I put those hangers for the client, individual client. So in this one I'm looking at here, Michael Mann, fast wrap up, fast to break even, needs, must be a needs-based business. Differentiated offering, warm sales environment, low investment, low overhead. These are the things that are most critical to this client. So then what I do is I, on a scale of 1 to 5, with 5 being the best score, I just subjectively rate my franchises in each of those categories against each other, and then I sort of total them. So it's a way for me to sort of check and balance if what I think I'm going to show them is really the best thing to show them. And so I found that it works good, and it keeps me really organized. And so you can never, ever forget the hangers either because, you know, these are right in front of me when I'm at a meeting. But if anybody wants something like that, you want to see an example, I'd be happy to send it.
Great. Thanks, Steve. One other thing that is, I don't know if it makes a huge difference, but, again, I learned it about 20 years ago, actually from Sherry Carroll, of all people, and how he agreed with it, is that if it's an achiever – and you're getting ready to show your deals, always lead with the one that you think they're going to gravitate to the most. Because if you miss it, a lot of times the achiever will check out. They don't care. You didn't hear them right. So always try to lead with the business that you think is the best match and that they'll be most excited about.
Great tip. Any other questions that we want to add or comments or things that you've discovered yourself throughout your career with FranNet that you want to share?
This is Mark Sunner. Hey, Jack, you mentioned on the internet thing with optionals, and I have had that a couple times with especially achiever optionals where they think they know better with everything. Any further advice you have, or maybe Blair, you might want to comment on that, how you know, they may even come back with when you're in the meeting, coming back with the internet research you're doing.
You know, quite honestly, I find it more with emulators than any other style is, you know, they think they got all the answers and they go and they self-ambush themselves real fast. And maybe don't even get to the first phone call with the franchisor. So again, I usually find it with emulators. I always stress that if I feel it's a client that might be externally validated or is susceptible to ambush, or I think it's going to do a lot of research prior to having the conversation with the franchisor, I always stress to them, I say, hey, let's really focus on getting the facts. I want to make sure you get good information that you can make good decisions from. So, you know, you might see a lot of things out there on the internet. Great, write them down, but then let's talk to the franchisors about it. More importantly, in 2 to 3 weeks' time, when we get to the point of talking to the franchisees, let's talk to the franchisees about it.
Two comments real quick, Mark. I don't find it too much with the type of value, but I find it more with are the internals. The internals, I find, can submarine on you. They can disappear, and I know they're out doing their research. So if you get an internal with an optional, then you're going to be in trouble because they will want to go out there and do their own research. I find if they're doing this in the meeting, I will stop the meeting and just tell me, what business would you enjoy? What do you really enjoy in life? And I'll bring them back to why they're here. You came because of, and I'll go back through my pain, and now you're telling me you're going to find this on the internet. How do you plan to do this? And I'll try and get them to give me the details of what they want to do. And generally, they will start to stumble, and then you can get the meeting back under control. But if you feel you're losing the meeting, stop it and get it right back on track right away. Don't continue the process. Stop the meeting. Go back after the person.
Great, thanks. Good advice.
You can't lose control of the meeting. You have to have control of the meeting.
Hey, just a question for everybody, and especially Jack and Blair with your experience. I heard through one of the development reps that one of our large direct competitors has moved to presenting 10 concepts to all their clients instead of just, you know, the 3 or 4 that we typically do. When I was thinking about the strategy of that, it seemed to me that maybe those optionals, you know, you give them each a little high-level description and then you sort of let them pick and choose the way they like to control things. What do you guys think about that, and do you think it's applicable at all to the type of person that we assess in maybe a specific assessment type, emulator as an example, or achiever in our system?
I think if you're doing the process right and you've gotten the pain and you windmill back to them, you're really getting clarity on why this is the best franchise for them. Why do you think this is a fit? They shouldn't be able to get more than 4. I mean, especially if they know they're going to get more. I'll tell people at that point if I think they need more. As you talk to these companies, I want you to keep track of what you like and what you don't like. And the more we find you don't like, we're going to drop those types. And I can focus the next round we get into more on what you like. But let's just start with broad. We can narrow it down later.
Thanks, Sam.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'll tell the client, hey, you know, there might be something else that we should take a look at. But like Jack says, we eliminate them. We'll add on 1 or 2. But generally, we find the magical number to be around 3 companies. Like I mentioned to you, I think, you know, we've always been showing 3 for the longest brand that's been around, so over 30 years, and it's worked. And I typically also find the comment that I get from a lot of my clients who do look at maybe 4, they say, wow, this is overwhelming. I didn't think this would be this much work so fast. And I tell my clients that. I say, look, quite often the comment that I get from my clients is if they look at more, they get too overwhelmed. So as long as they know that there might be others that they can take a look at, we're not just stuck to these 3, I think you're okay.
Thanks, Blair.
Yep. Any other questions?
This is Carol.
Jan, is there anything you wanted to cover further as far as, hey, information being handed out to clients other than don't do it?
I think everybody's kind of figured out we don't want to be hand out anything. So I tend to communicate pretty clearly on those things I feel that adamant about. But, I mean, the reason is, I mean, we're not trying to take away your ability to be effective in your job. We're trying to protect everybody. And, you know, I really appreciate what you said to Jack and Blair about showing more concepts, because that comes up in training a lot of times with some of our newer associates and franchisees. And I think it really gets down to what you guys have stressed in so many different ways, which is approaching these meetings with confidence. You're the expert. You know the concepts. You're presenting them with confidence. You know how to present them in a way that match your client. That's what's going to make the difference. You don't need a brochure to do that. You don't need a pamphlet. You don't need any other handouts. You are professionals, and there's no one out there that I would put up against any of my FranNet people.
Great. Megan, anything else?
This is Carol Wasco. There's one thing I wanted to add on the comment. Blair kind of surprised me that you sometimes don't register until the next day. That makes me a little nervous because my very first client I learned was actually working with a competitor, a competitive broker, and the next day had met with them. And so the Zor that I presented them to called me and said, hey, I want to let you know he's working with, somebody else. They just tried to register him. So I kind of have a conversation about, please don't go online and enter any inquiries. They're going to give you higher priority if your information comes from me because they know that we've had this conversation and we've, been through this process and things like that. So I just kind of – and then I basically explain, and this too is how we – make our living is when we, make these referrals. And so please refrain from going in and inputting any information because I can take care of that for you. Honestly, I enter them the second they leave my office just for fear of somebody else getting to investor.
Yeah, you can do that and just put a note like, hey, don't reach out to the client for 24 hours, so that way they're at least registered with the franchise, or sometimes I will do that right as well. But again, I only find that it applies to Belongers.
Yeah, that's an interesting idea. I hadn't really thought of it because I just pretty much do it for everyone. So thank you for bringing that up.
Is there anything else? Okay. All right, everybody. So thank you so much, Jack and Blair, for leading this call. And if anybody has any further questions on this that they want me to either find the answer for or what have you, I will get the answer for you. So just let me know if you come up with something later on after the call. And this recording will be sent out through the email, too. So in case you want to listen to it again and go back through, that's going to be available for you. So thank you, everybody, for your time today, and I hope you have a great rest of your week.
Thanks, Jack.
Thank you. Take care, everyone. Thank you.